CBS Eye on the World, I'm John Batchelor. Supreme Court, oral arguments to be decided soon enough. The case 303 Creative versus Elinus. This is an oral argument about a case in the future, but Professor Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution, a senior fellow, teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago, guides me to understand that this case is necessary because the lack of clarity of a previous similar case, Masterpiece Cake Shop versus Colorado Civil Rights Commission 2018, leaves there unanswered questions about freedom of speech and discrimination. Professor, a very good evening to you. Masterpiece Cake Shop, we begin there. Justice Kennedy writes what you characterize as a wishy-washy opinion. Does that become the basis for this new case to be decided? Is the lack of clarity in that case the reason the court took 303 Creative? Good evening to you.
Well, it's certainly one reason, but essentially what had happened in Masterpiece Cake is you had this guy, Jack Phillips, and he essentially was a Christian, and he told all of his customers that he would not make any cakes which essentially offended Scripture. He was an artist, he was a religious person, and he was a believer in freedom of expression. And it turned out that the Colorado Civil Rights Commission, which was extremely aggressive, started to take after him, and with such choice comments as, well, you know that it was people like you who are responsible for the Holocaust. That is, refusing to bake cakes is what Hitler really did, and got it completely wrong. And so you had all of this stuff. And the question is, what do you do? And there are two ways in which you could approach the case. The first of the ways in which you could approach it is to say, what we're going to do is look at all the terrible statements that are made by these characters. And as we look at those statements, what we're going to do when we look at those particular statements is say they were so motivated by malice and the like that we can't possibly give this any respect. Or you could write a different kind of an opinion which says, look, this is not about the misbehavior of the public officials. This is about the rights of individuals to engage in activities that don't offend their religious beliefs or their political beliefs. What Kennedy did is the former. So when the case went back down again, nobody had any idea what would happen if the folks on the Colorado Commission decided to be well-behaved and not to spew racial epithets or various kinds of insults that the parties involved. And so what we do is we have all this uncertainty. I can't think of a single case that has been decided as the masterpiece, which has actually gone in favor of the speaker or the cake maker or whatever. And so Ms. Smith comes forward in this particular case and she says, I don't want to face the heat. I want a declaratory judgment right now that if I essentially follow my religious beliefs, I'm okay.
This and is Laurie Smith of 303 Creative.
She's a fundamental Christian. And so she makes this particular announcement, and the court says, yes, we do have standing to decide whether or not you're going to be put into the crosshairs. And what happens is we'll think about it, and there's a two-part inquiry, which is done by the Tenth Circuit. Part number one is this speech. And what they decided, yes, it was absolutely a pure case of speech because she wasn't even baking a case. She was just running a website. And they said, since she's speaking, the question is, can we find a justification to limit?
So I want to clarify, she's a photographer and she puts up a website and the Tenth Circuit decides on one hand, this is freedom of speech issue. Is that correct? Freedom of
speech. Yes. And then on the other hand, they said, but we always have the ability to regulate monopolies, and they cite people like me in favor of that. My definition of a monopoly is a common carry which provides the only service from one location to another. Their definition of a monopolist is anybody who has a distinctive product. So if you have 100 cake makers or 100 photographers existing in some part of Colorado, you have 100 different monopolists. There has never been a sillier account of what a monopoly is than the one that was put forward by the Tenth Circuit. It's the kind of thing which is a joke, an intellectual embarrassment. You read it once, you read it twice, and you say, these people have lost their mind, which they did. And so it comes to the Supreme Court.
Richard, I want to clarify. The Tenth Circuit declared Laurie Smith a monopolist because...
Because she has a distinctive cake or a distinctive site.
A distinctive site, but that means that everybody with a website is a monopolist?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Sorry. I mean, that's why it's so moronic. She does often I customize services, and in competitive markets, what happens is people always try to find a way to distance themselves a little bit from their competitors. They usually have modest success, but not very much. And so what we really understand under the antitrust law is you've got 100 people competing for the same kinds of customers offering slightly different products, that this is a competitive market in which it turns out they're not supplying identical goods. And the sign of competition is the desperate effort of everybody to get themselves a little bit clear from everybody else. So this is the ideal competitive market because there's innovation on the one hand and multiple players on the other. Well, they decide this. Then it gets to the Supreme Court, and this issue just drops like a stone. They don't mention the word monopoly. They don't mention the word competition. What happens is you're left with a prima facie case. This is pure compelled speech, according to the court below, and everything else is irrelevant or wrong. And so it appears that it should be a knockdown victory. And at this particular point, what you start to see are the three liberal justices trying to figure out a way to extricate from this situation. And they take a different line, essentially led by Justice Kagan, who pushes it not once, but two or three times in the hearing. Equally bizarre, in my view. She says, you know what? You set up a template, and then it's the customer who fills out the template, so that the person who creates the website is not the website designer. It's you. And of course, what happens is you go back and you look at the findings down below. And what they say very clearly is Ms. Smith, in an effort to try to attract customers, seeks to offer a distinctive and effective website that essentially makes things better for the way in which she thinks wants to work. And you just can't believe all of that. And so what you're left with is the distinct impression that the conservative judges, who did not really become particularly bellicose in this case, we'll see the infringement and compelled speech, and they won't see any kind of monopoly justification, and they won't see any other justification for putting forward. And this monopoly point is extremely important. One of the things I did when I looked at this, did some research for this, is I just typed in LBGT, and up pops a big website with hundreds upon hundreds of groups, all of which are prepared to provide any conceivable sort of service for a gay wedding, which I think is perfectly admirable. And in fact, that you then go through there is you realize that if you tried to find a single gay person or couple on the face of the globe who did not have access to these particular sites, you could not begin to do it. What the 10th Circuit did, and maybe the dissenters will do it now, is they said that all gay customers are marginalized, which means what? They have no situation. The marginalized person in this case is anything is Ms. Smith. It turns out if you try to look at the political clout associated with LGBT stuff, it's just enormous. Justice Thomas, if you recall, in the case having to do with the abortion, Dobbs and Mike Jackson, what he does is he says, you know, I'm really against this whole substantive due process stuff. And that would include, of course, the substantive due process in Obergefell, the case which essentially recognized constitutional rights to a gay marriage. And within literally months or less, we now have a congressional bill that does exactly what they want. That is, they give a protection of gay marriage at the federal level. This is not the work of a marginalized group. This is the work of the most powerful coalitions in the United States. And on these issues, I think it's perfectly appropriate. The difficulty you get, John, with powerful coalitions is they do not understand the appropriate limits on their own discretion. So you can be absolutely passionate for gay marriage, and you can keep it within a consensual circle. But it turns out to me it's just completely inappropriate to say you are so powerful that you can now commandeer anybody to work for your business. Or even worse, you could go to them, ask them to do the business, know that they're going to turn you down, then turn it over to the Colorado Civil Rights Commission, and they can prosecute when you get your services from somewhere else. And so that was the pattern in Jack Phillips that would happen. And it turns out they managed to get their wedding cakes from somebody within a couple hundred yards of his particular establishment. This is why there's no monopoly. And this is why what it is that when you talk about the speech issue, the compulsion really matters. And there's no justification whatsoever for doing this because you can't find any want of services for anybody in this particular community. What always happens in these cases when you start to describe a group as marginalized is you indicate that there's some other group out there which has all the power, but you never explain who it is that they are or what is the particular power that they start to have. So what happens is the claim of being marginalized then allows you to sort of lever yourself up to get certain kinds of special protection, which is what the Colorado Civil Rights Commission wanted to do.
And Richard, this is a freedom of speech case entirely. Yes. And the Supreme Court now has a freedom of speech case before it to decide. What is your measure of how the court will decide?
Well, I'm pretty sure it's going to be 6-3. The conservatives seem to be just genuinely unpersuaded by anything that had been said. And there was, I think, a note of desperation in all the questions that came from the liberal side on this issue. I thought they were woolly. I thought they were uncertain. I thought, in effect, that they knew that they were wrong, but they were desperately sure to try to make this thing go. There is also something in the background, which is the other way to do these cakes with many of these people, is it just turns out they're also evangelical Christians. And so there's a free exercise of religion claim, which parallels the free speech claim. I've always thought in many ways the religion claim is actually a stronger claim than the free speech claim, because you're asking somebody to do something not that they don't like, but something that they regard to be a moral sin.
Yes, that would be the history of this country. My ancestors were pushed out of Great Britain, out of Lincolnshire, because they were Quakers. That is freedom of religion. And
yeah, and so, I mean, you know, you don't want to really do this. But what happened is, I mean, Kristen Wagoner, the lawyer who was representing this woman, she said, look, if it's freedom of speech, you can't compel me to say anything. It doesn't have to do with religion or anything else. So it turns out that, you know, Sonia Sotomayor just looked absolutely aghast at the thought that somebody might turn down a couple on the grounds that they were interracial. To which the answer is they certainly can turn that couple down if they want to. It's a form of expression. And if they don't approve of interracial marriages, they can do that. If they don't approve of interreligious marriages, they can do that. But what they cannot do is they can't defame the people saying that they're evil because they want to do it. And they can't prevent them from getting services from somebody else.
Is freedom of religion no longer a popular or useful tool? Has that been discontinued at the court level?
No, I think it's really very complicated, because in some of the cases involving the Catholic Church and its ability to participate in adoptions and child care for foster people, the religious element became very, very strong.
I see.
I think what has happened in this case is there's a kind of a transformation. If you go back to a case called Smith against the employment situation, one of Justice Scalia's worst opinions ever, there was an issue as to whether or not somebody who used peyote as part of a religious ceremony could be criminally prosecuted under the standard statute. And Justice Scalia wrote, well, so long as you punish heavy users for recreational purposes, the statute's neutral, so there's no particular protection given to somebody who does this for religion. Well, the criminal officers in Oregon didn't believe that, which is why they didn't prosecute the case. It was the employment officer who said, well, you committed a crime, so we can't give you unemployment.
So your opinion of this decision, can you vote for us now? Will it get the decision in June? How do you think?
I think we may even get it before then. I think it's going to go 6-3 under these circumstances, because when the Scalia came out with his views, the public reaction to it was absolutely crazy. And the American left joined with the American right saying you have to make accommodations for religion. But then the moment it became Hobby Lobby and cases having to do with whether or not in a work form you can have religious expression and so forth, then the American left just disappeared. And so the ACLU about 10 years ago decided to disaffirm this. So there's a checkered history on this. But I think, in effect, the religion clauses will be back in other kinds of cases where they're more applicable. But in this case, it turns out that the free speech stuff seems to be enough, because the monopoly rationale crumbled and nothing else was put in its place.
Professor Richard Epstein, a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, writing and defining ideas about a pending case to be decided by the Supreme Court, perhaps as early as early spring. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.